and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on Maryville Councilman Jeff Minchunk apologizing for a blackface Halloween costume. The addition of the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine helped Indiana expand eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Burgess Peoples, the executive director of Give Gary. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Maryville City Council member and Lake County Sheriff's Department police officer Jeff Minchunk apologized on Facebook last Saturday after photos of him in blackface at a past Halloween party recently surfaced. One photo obtained by The Times shows the elected official in blackface and a black wig and wearing a shirt reading "Kill Whitey." He is standing next to a person dressed in a white KKK robe. The photos were reportedly taken around 2003. In the apology, Minchunk wrote, "I blame no one else for what happened. It was my decision and a poor one at that." He goes on to say, quote, "The thing that bothers me the most is that this is not who I am. I never have been or ever will be involved in any type of racism." Maryville Town Council President Rick Bella did not respond to requests for comment. Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. told The Times he does not condone the past behavior shown in the photos, calling it disrespectful, irresponsible, and in bad taste. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A longtime heavyweight in Indiana's gambling industry is selling his stake in Gary's Hard Rock Casino project and will give up his state casino license after allegations of financial wrongdoings. The deal was announced Tuesday between former Spectacle Entertainment CEO Rod Radcliffe and the Indiana Gaming Commission. The agency had ordered him to give up his ownership stake in the existing Lake Michigan Casino in Gary and a new $300 million casino being built in the city. The dispute had threatened the new casino's opening this spring, but the commission said it will work toward its expeditious opening. A spokesman for Radcliffe says the agreement ends his, quote, unfair persecution.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana's wildlife and environmental agencies are investigating the deaths of numerous ducks, geese, and other waterfowl recently found dead around a Hammond lake. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources began receiving reports in mid-February of dead or dying waterfowl around the northern portion of Wolf Lake. The DNR and the Indiana Department of Environmental Management are investigating the deaths. A federal lab is performing tests to determine if they suffered any diseases or had any chemicals in their system.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana expanded eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine twice this week as more doses and a new vaccine provider became available. The addition of the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine helped Indiana lower eligibility to those 55 and older, then 50 and older within 2 days. Department of Health Dr. Lindsay Weaver says the J&J vaccine also enabled the state to create 3 mass vaccination sites in the coming days.
What's most important to understand is that all 3 vaccines are highly effective and successful at preventing hospitalizations and deaths. And those are the results we want to see with any vaccine.
State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says she's cautiously optimistic the state will be able to continue quickly expanding eligibility.
I would really be thinking that by mid to late March, we're to 40 and above.
Box says the state will also be adding more comorbidities to the eligibility guidelines, but that list is not yet available. Currently, those with sickle cell disease, Down syndrome, those on dialysis, getting treated for cancer, or solid organ transplant patients are all eligible.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Hoosier teachers can now get the COVID-19 vaccine through a federal program outside of the state's plan. A recent Biden administration announcement means that educators can get vaccinated through federal pharmacy program sites in Indiana. That's Kroger, Meijer, and Walmart. Governor Eric Holcomb says teachers who are not otherwise eligible for the vaccine in Indiana must schedule their appointments directly with those three stores.
They're scheduling with those three different entities, mm-hmm. directly with those three entities and sites, not 211. And not our website.
State officials did note that Hoosiers can locate all vaccination sites, including Kroger, Meijer, and Walmart, on a map on the state's website, ourshot.in.gov.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb signed into law legislation giving businesses and institutions liability protections for most COVID-19 lawsuits. Senate Bill 1 requires an individual wanting to file suit to show evidence of gross negligence or willful or wanton misconduct. The law will be retroactive, effective the beginning of March of last year and continuing through 2024.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Most Americans who have used their homes to work remotely in the past year won't be eligible to claim a tax deduction for home-related work expenses. Even if they have not stepped foot in an office since last March. Since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic in early 2020, many people who would otherwise have to report to work in person began working from home. And while it's common for self-employed workers to claim deductions related to their home office workspaces, most American workers don't actually qualify. Indianapolis attorney Timothy Whiffle explains this is because of a change included in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, which eliminated miscellaneous itemized deductions through 2025.
So even if you are an employee and you've been working from home since March, the expenses associated with a home office, for example, are categorically non-deductible.
People who are self-employed or own their own businesses are excluded from this change. But the definition of what constitutes a home office in the eyes of the IRS is quite narrow.
You really have to have a dedicated room that is used only for that purpose, and you don't share with your kids while they're doing their homework from home.
People who are self-employed or own their own businesses are excluded from this change. But the definition of what constitutes a home office in the eyes of the IRS is quite narrow.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's average unemployment rate in 2020 increased nearly 4% compared to the year before. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports many economists say due to problems with the data collection, it could be even higher.
Across the country, unemployment rates skyrocketed due to COVID-19, but the South and Midwest seem to fare a little bit better. And states more dependent on tourism and entertainment, like Hawaii and Nevada, experienced some of the worst job losses. Indiana University Assistant Professor in Economics Andrew Butters says it's no secret that Indiana's reliance on manufacturing made it a little easier to rebound from a pandemic-caused recession. But unlike the Great Recession, people are more likely to be unemployed long-term.
These are often now people that were separated from a job probably very early on, and that creates an altogether different type of environment.
Butters says as more people are vaccinated, it remains to be seen what pandemic behaviors will stick around and how that will affect job recovery going forward. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Schools are pushing the limits of their resources to provide learning opportunities for students wherever they can. While staff shoulder the pressure of the pandemic on top of a heavier and more complex workload, some leaders are getting creative to offer more wellness support. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains, with limited emergency school funding targeting learning gaps and a pandemic-prompted mental health crisis among children, staff are wondering who can and will take care of them.
The pressure to track kids down, get them engaged in school, and come up with lesson plans they can do remotely or in person is a lot.
I'm so worn out at the end of the day. I can't even sit down to enjoy like some TV.
Emily Race teaches language arts at Crawfordsville High School. Not having the things she used to look forward to, visits with her parents or trips with her best friend, makes it nearly impossible to cope with what she calls a nightmarish workload.
When I have 20 students who are out, but at staggered times for quarantine, trying to catch those patterns for who has dropped off the radar, who do I need to reach out to, in addition to the students who are physically in front of me, becomes very challenging.
How educators like Race are feeling isn't without consequence. The Indiana State Teachers Association surveyed more than 2,000 educators last fall, and roughly 70% said they're considering leaving the profession because of higher work demands. But it's not just longer hours contributing to the unbearable pressure.
Educators' ability to really empathize with and support their students is sort of maxed out.
Heather Ormiston is a school psychology professor at Indiana University. She says educators started showing signs of what's called compassion fatigue even before the pandemic, because kids come to school with all kinds of life experiences, sometimes deeply traumatic ones.
And it really becomes mentally and emotionally exhausting then for the educators who are exposed to these situations on a daily basis, to really feel like they have the ability to intervene and support the students that they have within their buildings.
The pandemic has only added more to everyone's maximum load. And as people share troubling reports about how students are faring, Ormiston says school staff need similar support because they're taking care of those kids and their families. School leaders aren't immune to pandemic stressors, but Ormiston says addressing those needs starts with them.
Leadership, the school administration, the district administration is so powerful in terms of really setting the tone for the culture and the climate of the building.
And there are leaders setting a more positive tone in their schools.
I am Jennifer Mitchell, and I am the principal at Perry Central Elementary School in Perry County in southern Indiana.
Mitchell says this school year, she offers more encouragement, letting some things go to focus on the big picture. She also talks about setting boundaries to let teachers take time to unplug.
Some have little kids that go to bed at 6 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night, and so it works better for them to be available. And so we've just really encouraged them, be very clear with your directions and with your office hours, with your families and your parents.
And staff have more tangible options, too. The school corporation now offers childcare to staff and pays for counseling and yoga. Mitchell and another principal set up two R&R rooms, that stands for Reset and Regulate, each with a massage chair and stocked with coffee and chocolate.
So if they need 10 minutes of their lunchtime to go down and sit in a massage chair and just take some deep breaths and to reset, then by all means do it.
But there's only so much school leaders can do on a tight budget. Limited federal emergency funds will likely target other pandemic-fueled problems, like closing learning gaps and addressing a blossoming mental health crisis among children. And as the government slowly rolls out a hotly in-demand supply of vaccines, teachers see few options other than to just keep moving. Teacher Emily Race says she has things to look forward to with her students.
You know, what do I look forward to professionally? I look forward to teaching Jane Eyre to my AP Literature students in the spring because we have so much fun with that unit.
Personally, she's just trying to make it to the end of the school year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Ginny Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Burgess Peoples.
The city of Gary has gotten involved along with many other communities in the country in what is called the Guaranteed Income Movement. And in the city of Gary, we have the executive director of GIVE, as it's known for short. We have Burgess Peoples with us. And Burgess, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about the overall Guaranteed Income Validation effort, which is how GIVE got its name, and the idea behind it that so many cities in the country have decided to join part of.
Yeah, I will say that Mayor Tubbs, former mayor of Stockton, California, he took this idea from what Martin Luther King had written in 1967, and it was passed as a bill in 71, but before it can get pushed through for any traction to come along with it, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. So it lay dormant for some time, and then Andrew Yang wrote a book about it, and then Mayor Tubbs took Martin Luther King's idea and actually put it into action.
I see.
A lot of the cities that are getting involved, this is before COVID, they were having financial disparities in their city. And COVID, all it did was make it worse. It just really magnified the financial disparities in our cities. And with the city of Gary, we were not exempt from that. So I'm glad that he went forth and put this in place, because what I did was I saw the opportunity and I'm like, this is something we can do with our residents. And I took it to Mayor Jerome and he's like, yes, no brainer. Let's get all the information we need and get this thing started, because our people are hurting just like the rest of the people in our nation.
Will you give us an idea, at least locally, what the city of Gary is facing these days? We, all face the same sort of thing in all of our communities to a point, but it's especially exacerbated in the city of Gary, I understand.
Yes. Across the state of Indiana, there is, you know, there's different brackets of what is the percentage of individuals on unemployment? And that shows how the effect of COVID has hit a lot of the households. I mean, even the median households of, say, the individuals that were above poverty, they just, you know, working class citizens or whatever. So now you have individuals that have lost their jobs. Sometimes both income individuals have lost their jobs. So now their family is at the poverty line. Mm-hmm. That has not been heard of in probably 10 or 15 years. But our unemployment ratio is now the highest in the state at 15%. And with that, we have had an influx of individuals needing resources. And from some of the food drives that I even coordinated with some of the churches here in the city of Gary, our numbers went from 200 to almost 2,000 with families needing food. Our resources, as far as rental assistance and electric assistance, utility assistance, and all these others have started to deplete because so many people are in need right now. So our numbers in those areas have skyrocketed due to COVID and the loss of employment. So right now, this is the best opportunity to combat some of that. Of course, our state have released some finances for some of the need. But I'm so glad that we are taking a part in this, because this will give individuals that are randomly selected an opportunity to pull themselves out of poverty by having a guaranteed income for 12 months.
That's good. Burgess, will you talk a little about the idea for the pilot program and some of the makeup of it, and in particular how people can get involved in it?
Yes. Now, for the city of Gary, you must be a resident of the city. You must be 18 years of age and older, and you must be at a salary medium of $35,000 or less. Mm-hmm. There will be a mailing going out to our residents that meet those criteria, and then there are some that are just really just have been in poverty for some time. When the letter go out, it would have a link for the application and also a survey. in order to participate, the residents must complete both and send them back. We are using the Mayors for Guaranteed Income research team, outsourcing the enrollment process with them, because I want to keep it fair, and they already have a lottery system set up of what they use, which is really awesome because now it's perfected. So with that system, once our residents send their information back, they will be put into the lottery system, and the gift recipient will be randomly selected, and we'll get that information back, and then we can move forward with the program.
Where did the information come from that you're able to assess the need and out there, and particularly to be able to create the list that, that you're working with, that in turn asking for the survey to be returned and the possibility that somebody might be selected?
The list will come from the census. I mean, that's the only way you can, you know, really tell who's what income level a person is, where they reside, you know, because the census have that information. So that, I think, is the best way to do it, and that's where the names will be pulled from, mm-hmm. because it lists on there what your income is. So they'll know who to send these letters out to. We get the names, and we send out the mailers, and all the information go back to California. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as how they're selected, that lottery system is electronic. So the names are put into that lottery system, and the lottery system would choose 125 names, if not more, of those that can participate in the to be a gift recipient.
Now, as the program is set up now, what timetable have you like to establish, certainly for the survey to go out and to get the surveys back, and in turn for this lottery process to be able to choose the 125 people that will be selected in the pilot program?
Yeah, it's looking like right now, I would say about 2 months before we can do anything else. The mm-hmm. letters will go out March 15th, and we have to give them time to, you know, complete them and send them back. So I'm looking at probably a 30-day window before we close that window of when they can return those applications once they go out. And once they are received and put into the lottery system, then we will receive those names from the Mayors of Guaranteed Income research team in California, and we will make an announcement of the gift recipient. Then we have an onboarding process. They have to understand whatever income they have currently. That is their income. This is a supplement. This is not to take the place of.
Right.
So we want to give them a hand up instead of a hand out. And we definitely want to make poverty a capable. So if you're using this as income, I understand, because a lot of people just do not have anything coming in right now. Unemployment for some still have not started. But if you have income, let this be a supplement to that to help you get ahead, to help you do some of the things that you dream of doing.
What kind of support and maybe even contributions from folks in the Gary area to this type of program, what kind of support are you getting and reaction to it?
The reaction has been magnificent. I mean, everyone, what they have are questions, so I'm so glad you invited me on today so I can clear up some of that and answer uh-huh. some of the questions, because what you're asking me is what they're asking.
Okay.
The other thing is there are, you know, the university, of course, IUN Northwest, and the nonprofits here in the area, everyone is like, hey, whatever you need, we are working with you. We want to have great success here in the city of Gary. So this could be, you know, spread abroad, and more cities can get involved, especially those that are financially strapped right now, to help their residents. So we have community partners. We have corporations that are willing to sow a seed into this to make sure we have that straight and sustainable start. So I'm really grateful for the outpouring of support that we're getting from everywhere.
That's great. Now, who is putting in the support initially here if we get the pilot project started?
That will be the National Mayors for Guaranteed Income organization. They have given us $500,000 seed dollars to get the pilot started.
Mm-hmm. And if things go well with this pilot program, is it likely to continue on? Is that the intent, that you hope that you get the support from the community and from other sources to be able to put together this support to help people out when they need it the most in Gary?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That is the aim. That is what we really want to do. My thing is to have a solid start and have sustainability with this pilot. I want to be able to, extend it past the 12 months and to help more families, because 125 is great, but there are so many more that are in need.
Mm-hmm. Now, if anybody has any questions, if they are concerned maybe about what they hear, what they've seen, where can they address the questions and get the answers that maybe they need, so that when the surveys go out and they get to return them back, they'll get their answers?
Yes, they can reach us at info@givegary.org. They can call 219-230-6754, or they can go to the website. We'll definitely have a lot of information on there as well, and that's www.givegary.org.
Well, Burgess, thank you very much for being with us to talk about this program, pilot program, which is called GIVE, which stands for Guaranteed Income Validation Effort, and set up here in the city of Gary. And the best of luck to you and everybody participating, and then hope this does continue beyond just the one-year pilot program.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.